Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is a war of ideology as well as attrition, and on the Ukraine side, the government in Kiev has banned 38 books from Russia, with titles like Superman Speaks Russian and Kiev Kaput, books that have argued against the very existence of Ukraine as a legitimate nation. The use of the German kaput in that one title is a reference to Russian accusations that Ukraine is a nation of Nazis and fascists. It's an old story left over from the imperial days of Russia wanting an empire all the way to the Danube River. The 21st century version suggests just how much on edge Ukraine is as this conflict wears on. Adrian Kartnitsky is senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, where he directs the Ukraine in Europe initiative. He was previously president of Freedom House, a civil liberties monitoring organization. He says this isn't a war of books, but it is a battle over sovereignty.
I don't think it's a cultural war. I think you have to understand that the country and politicians in the country are responding to a kind of a public anger and a public sentiment. And so these 38 books that have been proscribed are probably the most vicious, the most virulent. They're written, several of them are authored by what we would call neo-fascist authors who have no qualms about denigrating the existence of the Ukrainian people as a people. One of the authors has said that the Ukrainian people should be exterminated. So there, you know, you can sort of understand that within that context, regrettable as it is, people inside the Ukrainian state have chosen to take this kind of a step.
Do you think that the publication of the books themselves, the origin of the books themselves, represents some kind of propaganda war that the Russians or the Eastern Ukrainians are imposing on the people of Ukraine in addition to everything else?
Well, I think that if you look at specifically these books, I think that their intended audience primarily is the Russian citizenry inside Russia. And I think that the main effect of Russian propaganda is not making many inroads into Ukrainian territory, except in the places where it has information dominance, and that is in the territories occupied in the East. So I've actually bought a few of these books and had a few of these books brought back for me from Moscow. And they're, you know, 5,000 print runs, 2,000 print runs. They're not massive bestsellers. And I think that very few of them are probably even on Ukrainian territory. So they're not a major influence on the Ukrainian public.
Does the Ukraine government have any options to get a counter message into Russia or into Eastern Ukraine even?
It has a very weak capacity. It's a fairly poor country under economic stress, exacerbated by the war and by the, you know, destruction of infrastructure. So really, they're fighting an unequal war. And so they take these kinds of measures to sort of show that they're doing something. It's not particularly effective, and I think it has more of a symbolic impact. But I think it's, you know, when these kinds of things happen, banning books is always, there's a danger of a slippery slope. So far, Ukrainian society is quite vigorous. There's very sharp debate and criticism of government policies, including the war policy. So there isn't a sort of an attempt to cow or censor Ukrainian citizens in discussing how their government is performing. But there's always the danger that if these kinds of habits develop, that they could expand and become a more worrying phenomenon.
There is a historical context here. The Ukrainian attempt to establish an identity amidst the Russian Empire in the 18th and 19th centuries, you know, produced a mutual distrust and really a sense of terror between Russians and other groups in the East that worsened the ability of either side to have democratic pluralism of any sort. Both sides tended to be intolerant.
And I think the problem is that, you know, the context in which the Ukrainian state tried to establish itself in the aftermath of the First World War, and it failed, and it dealt with communism and communist totalitarianism, and then fascism arose. So the environment in which Ukrainian discourse developed was an environment of the rise of fascist and Nazi movements on one hand, and the rise of communist totalitarianism, not exactly a great climate for the rise of democratic discourse and democratic ideas. The most important thing is that, you know, over a year and a half ago, we had the Maidan, the protest movement, which was a lovely, primarily nonviolent civic movement, very tolerant, multi-ethnic, civic nationalism. Of course, those sentiments are still fairly strong in the society and fairly vigorous within the leadership. But on the other hand, you've got a wartime situation, people's tempers, patience, and sensibilities are affected by the war. And it's a tough balancing act. And I think it's the danger. And that's why it's very important to discuss these things for the West and the United States to be aware of it. Ukraine is desperately dependent on Western financing. And I think the democratic world, in helping Ukraine with economic aid, can sometimes push back against these trends should they move in the wrong direction in any dramatic way.
Really valuable insights there that we don't hear very often. Adrian, thanks so much.
Great pleasure.
Adrian Karatnitsky is senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, where he directs the Ukraine in Europe initiative. He was previously president of Freedom House, a civil liberties monitoring organization.